to sight.
Spend the day with sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Offering humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's afternoon satsang. It's a real warm day today. It's been warm all day this week, all week long. And we are going to continue the discussion we had last week. We got very impressive responses from our listeners. We were not too sure how well the discussion went, but we are happy to note that people did take a lot of value lessons from what Swami said through us. So we hope to continue that discussion today. So before we start, as always, and as it's rightly done, we offer humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and I also welcome my brother Arvind to join me. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and when you made this reference to the summer having descended, you know, I have this feeling that in Puttaparthi, there's almost like a climate, a season button or a switch, you know. It's almost like till yesterday it is winter or spring, and from today onwards it is summer. That has been the way the climate has changed at Puttaparthi, at Prashanthanilayam. Just about 1 week back, it used to get cold at night. I remember draping myself in blankets early in the morning. But right now, oh my God, it is just hot and hotter and hottest, especially in the afternoons. Just can't bear going out. And that is why, you know, it's a heart full of gratitude that I offer to Swami for this beautiful studio where we are sitting in the comfort of an air conditioner and we are able to discuss things which are really cooling to our hearts. Because, you know, right now in the world there's heat of so many kind of problems that's going on. This heat is being felt, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Latin America, whether it's the United States of America, whether it's the African nations. Everywhere this kind of heat is being felt. In India, it's the heat of elections that is being felt. And to adding on to all this is the actual physical heat of the summer that is beating down. And cooling us from all this is our lovely little heaven of peace, comfort and serenity, Prashanthanilayam. And our dear Swami's love that keeps us cool against all the other heats also. And His real, you know, selflessness and the way He wants to benefit the whole world because of that, because of which He gave us this opportunity to have this radio channel through which we will be able to transmit that coolness of His love, grace and beauty throughout the world in this time of great heat.
One of the things which you said and which is very important is we often think that things have to settle down and things have to work out the right way for us to feel comfortable, for us to feel. But I think the reality is what spirituality teaches us is nothing changes around you, but your perspective changes, your way of looking at things changes, and then everything changes. Nothing changes, but everything changes.
Exactly. You cannot change the world, but you can change your world, which is more than enough to change everything.
Right. And of course, talking about the heat and talking about the cool environment we're sitting in, and I should say the only other thing which is cold is the cold I'm having, so I hope the listeners will put up with my inability to be more clear in my voice. But coming back to the topic we're talking, you know, fear. You know, when you say somebody is scared, somebody is having fear, you often think that that person is weak. You know, we often say that he's a coward, he's a person who cannot defend himself or who's lacking in strength. But that actually is not the truth. You know, just a couple of days back I saw a video. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you would have seen one of the latest James Bond movies. There is a chase sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, where there are these two people jumping from one building to the other, jumping from huge girders and, you know, those tall structures from there to down. It's one of the most fabulous chase sequences you could ever see in a movie. And that person, you know, the stuntman who played the role of the villain, he was saying that he has vertigo. He has fear of heights.
Oh, okay.
And people are asking, how did you ever do that? You know, if you had the fear of heights, because everything about that stunt was about heights.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yes, you know, you cannot wait till you overcome a fear to actually face it. He said, you have to take it and you have to face it head on. So when you say fear, fear is not something which is associated with only with the weak, only with the cowards, only with those who cannot defend themselves. Fear is a universal feeling, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, even if I look into my own life, I'm sure I'll be able to list out so many fears that I have. Maybe it will embarrass me to list it out, but then I cannot deny the fact that I have many, many fears. And I'm sure that same is with you too, Prem, that you too will have fears. Maybe you're embarrassed to list them out, but you definitely have your fears. You know, I don't think there's anything to be embarrassed about fear, but there is a lot of, you know, meaning and message that we can learn through this fear. In fact, one of the greatest treatises of our times, not our times actually, one of the greatest treatises of all times, which has been referred to again and again, and which has been a source of inspiration, a source of strength, a source of calm, a source of detachment for millions of people around the world through the ages. That whole thing came because of fear. And not the fear of any ordinary mortal, the fear of one whom nobody would have ever imagined he would have had fear. Now, I am building up all the suspense. Let me take you back thousands of years ago. Let me take you back thousands of years in time to a magnificent and large battlefield. You know, on one side of the battlefield are arrayed the forces of the Kauravas, and on the other side are the forces of the Pandavas. For those of us who have even been briefly acquainted with the Mahabharata, we know that the Kaurava brothers committed great injustice, heinous adharma, against the Pandavas. And, you know, as we go through the Mahabharata, our blood boils at the injustice that the Kauravas mete out against the Pandavas. And when the ultimate injustice is meted out, that is when the dharmic war, a war of righteousness, has been called for. And that is why now the two armies stand face to face on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And then among the Pandavas is the great hero, Arjuna. You know, Arjuna is considered as an unrivaled archer, an unrivaled battle-hardened soldier, a general, a chieftain, anything that you can call, and one who can never be vanquished because he has received innumerable boons from innumerable deities, you know, from Lord Shiva, from Lord Krishna, from so many gods and demigods he has received boons. And added to that, you know, his chariot is being commanded by the Lord himself. Lord Krishna is commandeering his chariot. And Arjuna is expected to be the spearhead of the Pandava attack. And at such a moment, Arjuna tells Krishna, "My dear Krishna," this is there, it's the 28th shloka in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna says, "My dear Krishna, you know, I feel that the limbs of my body are quivering, my mouth is drying up, my whole body is trembling, my hair is standing on the end, my bow, Gandiva, is slipping away from my hand, my skin is burning," you know, all the classic symptoms of extreme stress and fear. He says, "Lord, I cannot fight." You know, we shall continue on this further, but just imagine the greatest warrior of all times, who has been wanting to, you know, avenge adharma, who has been wanting to fight back against the forces of unrighteousness and annihilate them. And he has been prodded on, and it's not as if war has been declared immediately. They have done peace, they have tried peace talks, which have all failed, and the Lord himself is backing and saying, "I have come, yada yada hi dharmasya," whenever there is a decline in dharma, I come to fight, and I have come, let us fight now. In that critical moment when it's about to begin, when the first arrow has to be released, Arjuna gets drowned in fear. Wow. So, I don't think there's anything to feel ashamed of when we say that you and me get fears, have our fears.
And that fear is very interesting because, you know, here you're looking at the whole Pandava, you know, army facing the Kaurava army. But just a very short while ago, there was I think, a war in the kingdom of Virata. you know, during the Ajnatavasa of the Pandavas.
At the end of the Ajnatavasa, yes.
Yeah, where actually Arjuna single-handedly defeats the whole Kaurava army.
Correct.
Where all of these people are there. Bhishma is there, Drona is there, Karna is there, and all of them, single-handedly Arjuna actually defeats that entire army. So if you say that his fear was the fear of losing, then it's absolutely not true, because he went there as confident as any warrior could have been. Because he went there with absolutely sure, as you said, you know, one thing is his personal prowess, and the other thing is that Krishna is sitting beside him. I mean, he had no doubt that he's going to win, but the fear was fear of even winning.
Yes, that is a very, very beautiful point, Prem, because as you said, he had defeated the entire army, and you know, his faith in the Lord, it's not as if that he didn't have faith in the Lord also. His faith in the Lord was at its supreme height. Because just before the war, you know, we know the story where he and Duryodhana go to Lord Krishna to seek help. And I will not go into the details of that story, but over there, Arjuna asks Lord Krishna, when Lord Krishna gives a choice, saying that you either have my entire army, the Narayani Sena, the Yadava army, which is almost unconquerable, inconquerable. It's a very, very mighty, invincible army. That on one side. On the other hand, one of you can get the army, the other person will get me. And listen, if I am on any side, I am not going to pick up arms. So you have, in quotes, helpless, armed, unarmed Krishna on one side. And on the other side, you have the entire Narayani army. And at that time, Arjuna, without batting an eyelid, says, Lord, I want you. That shows that his faith in Krishna was supreme. At the same time, it also speaks of his self-confidence. You know, Arjuna had a feeling that, actually, you know, I need nobody. I single-handedly will maul the entire Kaurava forces. That was his confidence. And as you said, such an Arjuna, who did not lack in anything, still had this fear where, you know, his spirit sagged, his bow dropped off, his skin started, you know, burning. And actually in the 28th shloka itself, Arjuna himself hints, possibly unconsciously, at the reason for this. And that he says, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me, I feel that my limbs and body are quivering, my mouth is drying and all that. So, his fear has got to do something with seeing his friends and relatives present before him, against him in the battlefield.
And it's the rest of the Bhagavad Gita actually describes this emotion with which Krishna, Arjuna asks that question to, you know, Krishna. Because what Krishna explains in the rest of Bhagavad Gita is in a sense what his fear is based upon. And to show him that if you remove these things on which your fear is building, then you not only become fearless, but you actually realize what you are and what you come here for and the very purpose of life is. And that is what makes conquering fear such an important thing. Because that is one of the most essential part of the journey which we are all going through.
Exactly, Prem, because you know, the first shloka of the Bhagavad Gita starts with Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra, the battlefield where this whole war was held, is compared to Dharma Kshetra, or the field of Dharma, which is life. So the battlefield of Kurukshetra is a metaphor for the battlefield called life. And from that metaphor, you know, we realize that the entire Bhagavad Gita was delivered to dispel this fear, this despondency of Arjuna, this lack of inspiration on his part to fight. The fear that came because of his attachment to his friends and relatives, to his so-called friends and relatives. And you know, we know that the Bhagavad Gita goes on to dilate on teaching a person that he is in reality not the body or the mind. He is actually the soul, the same soul that pervades all. So attachment is meaningless, because who is attached to whom? That is the question. That is what the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita delineate. And they also, you know, stress on karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga. But coming back to this point of attachment, in spite of having the Lord by his side, all the skills, all the talents, everything in the world, and also a just reason to fight, Dharma on his side, I mean Yudhishthira was on his side. See, if you see metaphorically, Yudhishthira is on his side, meaning Dharma is on his side. Krishna is on his side, meaning the Lord is with him. All the skills and talents are on his side, because he has been blessed by the Lord with everything. So he has everything on his side. in spite of having everything on your side, you will still be drowned in fear if you have attachment. And you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that attachment is actually the result or the fruit or the flower of desire. Desire is the root cause of attachment. I'm sorry, I said fruit and flower. But desire is the root cause of attachment. And so, you know, here, through this we understand one very, very important aspect and facet of fear that we can discuss today in our satsang, that fear finds its roots in desire. Where there is desire, there is fear. Just like Arjuna had fear on the battlefield of Kurukshetra.
Maybe Arvind, we should go and decode this thing, because when we say attachment, when we say desire, I mean, these are all like spiritual taboo terms. You know, people would think that, okay, yes, that is true, but it's a very, very wide way of looking at it. But zeroing it down to personal facts, and if we were to explain how this actually happens, our main fear is, what if my plans would not go the way I have planned it? You know, I have decided something, what if it does not work out the way I have desired? You know, that is the fear which actually disturbs us most of the time. You know, when you apply for a course, let's say you're getting into a college, I so much want to get into the college, that's desire. And then you have a plan, because you feel that if I complete my engineering here or whatever is here.
And if I may add on, Prem, that desire that you want to get, see what happens is you get a desire that you want engineering from say X college. It slowly grows into an attachment where you feel that I have to get an engineering from X college only. The only gets added, which is the attachment. Okay, because that is what leads to fear that I may not get. It will not actually be the fear that I may not get into engineering. It will be the fear that I may not get into engineering in the X college, because the desire element has brought in attachment. So, you know, desire strengthens and adds on to your fear. And as you were saying, yes.
Right, and that's what happens. So you've already planned and you feel that 20 years hence I will be here if I do these things. And in that, one of the things might be, you know, getting into that right college, getting that right course and doing the right post-graduation. So you made a plan, and now your fear is, you know, it can be derailed in any of these stages. So you fear for every stage in that plan. And most often that's the thing, you know, you have a desire, you have an attachment, and you are holding on to it so tightly, and you wonder, you're not able to imagine a scene which is without these things working out properly.
And we come off with the conclusion that these things don't work properly, we are gone. We are doomed. I mean, how many times have we in life had fear of not progressing in a career, because we have our heart set upon, or we are desirous and we are attached to a particular, you know, post or a particular way that we are planning. And we have a fear because we feel we may not get it, and that's the end of life. How many times we have this fear in relationships? Because we have set our hearts upon or desirous of a person, he or she, and we are attached to him or her, and we feel that life is going to be doomsday if that doesn't come out. So you see, you know, it's actually fear is as non-existent as darkness. You know, God did not create fear. God did not create darkness. Where there's no light, there is darkness. In the same way, where there is no dash, that which we shall discuss during the satsang, there is fear. Fear is not actually an entity that exists. Fear comes because we perceive something as not happening, and that perception is created by desire and attachment.
You know, I'm just reminded of a story which we used to read in English classes when we were students. I don't know how exactly it fits in here, but for some reason the story is coming in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a Kannada play which was rewritten in English, a very famous Kannada play, I believe. You know, there are these two men who are very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
One is a wrestler, and the other is actually the poet and a scholar of that land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the scholar of the land manages to win the hand of one of the most beautiful ladies in that town. So these three are actually walking through a forest.
Mm-hmm.
One particular day, and these two men get into a fight with a yaksha.
Okay.
And a celestial being. Uh-huh. And the celestial being, you know, as a punishment, gets their heads chopped off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so this lady is sitting there and she's wailing because one is like a very good friend and the other is her husband who is lost in this battle. So she's crying and the Grama, the Vana Devata, or you know, the forest deity, she appears in front of her and consoles her and gives her a magic twig and tells her that you put the head and the body together and you put the twig on the neck and the torso and the head will attach to itself. So this lady is, you know, she's so anxious and she's so worried about the thing. What she does is she interchanges the heads.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So the one with that intelligent head gets the well-toned body.
So it becomes a perfectionist.
It becomes a perfect being. Huh. And the other one with an emancipated body gets the dumb head. Because the wrestler is actually a dull head. Okay. And now this lady has got to choose who will be the husband. And needless to say, she chooses the one who has become the most perfect man now. Because he's got the brightest head with the most well-toned body. But the story goes that the man who has lost his body and is stuck with his dull head moves away from the friend. And years later, this man actually becomes again that wrestler with the same body. And the man who gets that well-toned body, with time he doesn't do the exercise.
Correct.
And it goes away. So the author says, let's see, the spirit...
You know what, Prem? I'm getting goosebumps because just 2 months back, I had gone to Bangalore to witness a drama. And it was exactly this play that was done.
Okay.
And yes, she, you know, now falls in love with the other guy and the story goes on like that. Perfect. Terrific. I mean, right. Very nice.
You know, at that point, the author says, let's see, when this event happened, that wrestler felt very bad because he felt cheated that what was his was no more his. But then the author says that that spirit which actually made him that wrestler was still in him. So it just took a matter of few years before he got back to that well-toned body. Because he did not lose anything. He just lost a body. But that spirit of being a strong man was still in him. And when you look at it, you know, you talk of relationships. You fall for somebody and that person does not become your partner in life.
Spurns you.
Okay. The thing is, the one which actually gives you joy is the fact that you were able to love somebody.
You were in love with
you somebody. were in love with somebody. It's not because it was so-and-so.
Exactly.
And if we were in a position to understand that, then you will actually come to the real source of that happiness. Dear listeners, we are discussing this because, you know, a lot of people actually feel this as the most important thing they have to surmount in that particular age, isn't it?
Exactly. Especially as you're passing out of your teenage years, it feels so terrible and, you know, a heartbreak is something that's so hard to deal with. So, if we are able to recognize that the source of love is actually within us, just like that person realized that in spite of having a weak body and a, you know, not so intelligent head, looks, I mean, in spite of that, the spirit with which he developed that was with him and with that he could develop everything. Coincidentally, I'm remembering the name of the drama. I think the name of the drama is called Hayavadana.
Right, exactly. Hayavadana.
So Hayavadana was the name of the play. Beautiful play. Very profound play, as you said. So this shows that, you know, there is... actually, it's not as if that the whole world is lost if our desire is not fulfilled. It comes back to the fact that desire can actually give rise to fear. And if we are able to let go of desire by realizing this, as you said, that the actual reality, actual power, actual strength, actual spirit exists within us, it will really take us a long way in overcoming fear. Fear and desire are inextricably intertwined. The more desires that we have, the more fears we will have.
I think that's what happened to most people, you know, most of us in front of Swami. We would always think, you know, what if Swami doesn't answer my prayer? And our prayer to Swami would always be seasoned in such a way that he would know what we are actually hinting at. You know, we would give him the options louder, which the options which we wanted Swami to choose.
Exactly.
It always happened because we had a plan and we did not want Swami to...
Do you remember, Prem? I mean, I don't know if you used to do it, but a lot of us, I do it still. You know, we put lots in front of Swami. And we say, Swami, you pick... in the sense, we go to Swami, suppose we have choices A, B and C to do it. And just say that I like choice B. But still, I don't have the courage to undertake choice B because of whatever. it feels good if Swami selects choice B, because then I feel that it's his responsibility to ensure that it comes out successful. So I take 3 pieces of paper and write A, B, C on it and throw it in front of Swami's picture, or I put it in the altar and I pray to Swami and pick up one choice. You know, for me it happens so many times when if choice B comes, I'm elated, I'm excited, I'm thrilled and happy.
Then that will be the last one.
But in case if choice C comes, I'll feel maybe let me do best of 3 tosses. You know, which comes 2 out of 3 times, that is the choice that Swami is making. You know, that strong desire, that strong attachment to what you want is what makes you get a fear. It actually many times, you know, I also feel, let me not put this toss in front of Swami. Let me not put this toss in front of Swami, because what if he picks up a choice which I don't like? I will not be able to face it. And talking of tosses, Prem, I'm telling you, I had a real life situation where I was tossed like this because of my fear, and this was not a photograph Swami. Though, you know, in my heart, I have no doubt that Swami or a photograph Swami or an idol Swami, I-D-O-L, idol Swami, it's the same. You know, the choice that Swami makes is the same if we have the faith and the courage to follow what comes. What matters is whether we have the courage to follow it or not. Now, before narrating my incident, I'm reminded of another incident, because I wanted to highlight that what Swami says is important. But what is equally important is also whether we have the courage to carry it out. Mm-hmm. You know, because Swami says, Lord is nothing but reaction, reflection. Now, how much importance, value, and how much you give to the Lord, that is what you get from the Lord. You know, many times we ask Swami some questions, and we ask Him what we should do in different circumstances. And Swami tells us to do something. As I said before, forget the chits and picking up lots. Even when Swami physically tells us, we think if it is something that we wanted, we are happy to follow it immediately. If it is something that we didn't want, we try to look for, you know, maybe Swami meant like this, maybe Swami is testing me. Why don't you think that Swami is testing you when He gives you directly what you wish? Because this happened to one person whom I know quite well. He's one of my classmates. And he had his desire, you know, to do something, but he decided to ask Swami what he should do after he completes his education here. So he went to Swami, and you know, Swami said, what do you wish to do? Now, I felt that this boy will tell what he wanted to do, but he said, Swami, whatever you wish. You know, it's a fantastic thing to say that, Swami, whatever you wish, I will do. But I feel that when we tell that to the Lord, are we ready really? What if Swami says, you just sit here for the next 10 years and don't do anything? Are we ready for it? If we are not ready for it, I feel it's best to be honest with the Lord. But he said, Swami, whatever you say. Swami again asked him, no, you tell me, what do you wish to do? He said, Swami, nothing, whatever you say, I will do. And then Swami suddenly tells him, study medicine, become a doctor. Okay, now I was shocked. Here is a person who had done engineering. After that, he had completed MBA. Now, you know, we usually take up a medical course when we are about 16-year-old. Right. He is a 23-year-old now. He has lost 7 years with respect to anybody else who would like to do medical. So he came back, and you know, some of us asked him, what are you going to do now? He said, I think I will do medical. So he said, wow. Now, I didn't know whether this was like peer pressure or was this conviction. But whatever it is, if it is conviction, it's great. But you know, if we do something out of peer pressure and such things, it becomes a problem, because this continued for a few months. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing him in the class, he would be studying 12th standard biology, because he's preparing for medical exams. Okay, and I was thinking, oh my God, that is a really determined guy. Because he had to attend the classes, at the same time, he had to prepare for medical. So he's attending the classes, but under the desk, he's studying medical. As a result of it, of this, he didn't do well in his examinations. He didn't do well in his examinations, and then he could not even study biology that well. After a few months, you know, his determination wavered. And naturally, I can totally empathize with him. He came and said, he was saying that, I know, I don't think so, I can do this. He got up once more and went to Swami. And he said, Swami, I'm thinking that after I finish this, I plan to do this and this and this. Swami said, yeah, do it. He said, thank you, Swami. And he returned back to place. And he's well settled in life now, and he's doing something which is not medical anyway. But, you know, this is what I was meaning to say that I'm narrating this as a prelude, because when I narrate my experience, this is what comes. When you really want God to make the choice, I feel we should be having that amount of faith and surrender to accept whatever He gives, and the courage to follow what He gives as a choice. Otherwise, don't ask the Lord. Don't go to Swami seeking Him to just confirm whatever you are desiring, because God will give us whatever we need, but He may not give us whatever we want, because He knows what is best for us. So if you are colored strongly by your desire, that is when you will actually have fear in seeking out the Lord's solution, because you fear that your desire will be unfulfilled.
Okay, Karan, before you go ahead, I should just clarify this. This person you spoke about, I know him very well.
Oh, okay.
And the way the thing ended was a little different and
okay.
Very beautiful, in fact, you know.
Mm.
Because I remember when he went up to Swami and he asked Swami, and Swami said MBBS.
Mm.
Just the night before, it seems he had a word with his father.
Okay.
And his father was asking him, after your MBA, what are you going to do?
Okay.
So he said, see, tomorrow I'm going for birthday blessings. I'm going to ask Swami. And his father asked him, what if Swami says MBBS?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And this boy said, I'll do. If Swami says, I'll do.
Okay.
And his father laughed. Because he said, how can you do MBBS if Swami says?
Oh-ho.
And the next day when he goes up and Swami exactly says the same thing, Swami says, do MBBS.
Mm.
And this boy's resolve was so spontaneous and so strong that his father was surprised.
Oh, okay.
That, you know, he was not joking.
As I said, all of us in class were also surprised.
Right.
Because I said, we saw him do it.
Right.
We saw him studying all the while.
And then after that 1 year, he stayed back here. He was, as you said, preparing for his, studying 12th standard biology and all that. And he found that he had actually crossed that age within which he has to apply in India. So he could no way get a medical seat in India, even if he clears that exam.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
So then he started exploring other options, and then he found that he could either go to Russia or China and do a medicine.
Hmm.
And he was going, and he was about to go and apply for the visa.
Hmm.
And that's when one of the teachers came and told him that maybe once you should go and ask Swami.
Okay.
You know, because there is no going to be returning from this. Maybe once you should go and ask Swami. Tell him that this is what you're doing, this is what Swami you told me to do, and I'm doing this, and I want your blessings. And I remember he went, and this was when Swami was in the Yajur Mandir, and he went up and he requested the brothers there to give a letter of his to Swami explaining the whole thing. And then Swami read it, and Swami just sent word saying that, ask him not to go anywhere, ask him to use whatever he has studied so far and serve his parents. And that's when he realized that, you know, when we look at that situation today, and he was cool in both situations, when Swami told him to do MBBS and later when Swami told him that, no, I just, maybe Swami said, I was just testing you. He was absolutely calm in both situations.
That's fantastic.
But the lesson which all of us learned, and maybe his father also learned, I think that was very profound.
Exactly. And Prem, I mean, let me first thank you for clearing this, because I see that I had got a bit judgmental. But all the same, means when I witnessed it, see, this is another beautiful message, that any time we witness something, we see it from our perspective, which can often get colored and may be the wrong thing also. So that is the reason why, you know, I didn't go to name or anything, and I just narrated the incident. It's great that you cleared it up. But you know, even then, having witnessed this whole thing, what stuck in my head seeing this is, unless you are absolutely sure that you will do what Swami says, unless you are absolutely sure that you have no desire in your heart, don't ask Swami. Don't ask God to step in. Because when God steps in, the best always happens. And the best may not always be what you are thinking is the best.
Exactly.
This is the thing I learnt. But why? Now you see, it is such a tough lesson to learn, because in spite of, you know, having resolved this, having seen this whole thing,
having the theoretical knowledge
completely, it's after that I joined Radio Sai, and you know, and I felt that these are lessons. I not only saw this, Prem, I have written it down in my diary also. You know, I have written it down this way, and I have written down the message from that you know, whatever happens, unless you are free from desire, don't seek God. Don't seek from God, because you will not be able to face it. You will have fears. In spite of that, I fell in the trap, and that is what I wish to narrate now. You know, this happened sometime in 2009. in 2009. Yes, 2009. One of my Sai brothers, you know, he walks up to me one day and he says, Arvind, this summer, why don't you come along with me to my sister's house? So I said, okay. He said, my sister lives in Singapore. Come along with me to Singapore.
Okay.
And it'll be great, you know, because the people there in Singapore are very, very enthusiastic about listening to Swami's stories and experiences, especially from students.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you join me? You know, I mean, that is a general thing, Prem. Who, in which part of the globe will people not be eager to listen to Swami's stories? So when he said this, I was very, very happy. I jumped at that. But then the next thought that came is, oh my God, will I be able to, you know, afford a ticket to go to Singapore?
Which year was this?
This is, I think, 2009.
Okay.
2009, yeah. So I was wondering, will I be able to afford a ticket to go till there? Oh, even as I'm thinking this, I don't know, maybe my face was transparent. He tells me that, you know, the booking and all is done. You just have to come along. Now, you know, again, the other thought that started coming is, oh God, at somebody else's expense, is it fine? And even as I'm thinking this, I think again, this was transparent on my face because he says, see, it's not as if you're coming for a fun trip, okay? It's not as if somebody's financing a fun trip for you. You are going to deliver 3-4 talks on Swami and people there are hungering to listen to stories on Swami. So you'll be satisfying that hunger and it'll be great. It'll be very nice. It'll be a great service you're doing. Now, that tempted me because, you know, I love to travel abroad and I had never done till then. I had never stepped out of the shores of India. So it excited me. I was very thrilled. At the same time, you know, at the back of my head, I'm remembering all these discourses where Swami says, Janani Janma Bhumish, Swargada Pigariyasi, mother and motherland are greater than heaven. And you know, in that discourse, Swami says, I remember very strongly Swami says that people leave the shores of India, go to work abroad and they go and do dishes over there. They do menial jobs there. Do the same in your motherland. Serve your mother, serve your family that way. Why do you want to go and do the same outside? You know, that translated and came to me as, Arvind, do you think that it's only people in Singapore who need to listen to Swami stories? Don't you think there are enough people in India to do that? Why do you want to go to Singapore? Now, that is one voice that has arisen from within me. Another voice that comes, it says, listen, if Swami wanted you to speak in India, he would have given, you know, he would have given a circumstance where an opportunity to speak in India arises. But since now the opportunity to speak in Singapore has arisen, this must be part of Swami's plan. Now, honestly, Prem, I did not know which is the angel's voice and which is the devil's voice.
Okay.
I didn't know which one is my mind, which one is my heart. I was really in a confusion. I didn't know what to do. Again, that must have played on my face because the Sai brother told me, why don't you just ask Swami? I said, yeah, that's great. That's easy. I'll just ask Swami and whatever Swami says, I'll do it. So what I did was immediately I wrote a letter saying that Swami, in a month's time from now, there's a chance that I may go on a long trip. I wrote like that. I may go on a long trip. And it'll be, and in the trip, I need to speak about, it's a chance to speak about your glories and stories, Swami. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And I remember there was a program going on in Mandir. This was in the month of March.
Okay.
The tickets were booked for the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
So in the month of March, I was shooting the program. The video camera was placed behind Swami's chair and I was shooting the program. And after the program, when Swami received Aarti and was leaving, I held out the letter. He just looked at me and asked for the letter and he took it. And I felt like that's done. I mean, it's done. Okay. Swami has cleared it. I'm very happy. So I went and told this brother also that, you know, Swami took a letter from me and he didn't tell me anything negative. So I think it's fine. And you know, I just said, even he asked me, you're sure, right? It's confirmed then. Because usually, you know, we often try to tell Swami and ask, we want to hear that yes from Swami's mouth.
Right.
I said, yes, yes. Swami has taken the letter. It's cleared. You know, today when I look back at it, I realize that it was more of my eagerness to go that made me tell that. So he went ahead. Now, months passed, fast forward to May. In 2 days' time, I had to leave. And you know, from inside that voice began again, saying that, you know, you cheated Swami. You just, you have just written that you're going on a trip, long trip. you have not written that where you're going. Why? Because before that, you know, when I went to Bombay or whether I went anywhere, wherever I went, I used to write the whole thing and give it to Swami and tell Swami also, Swami, I'm going 3 days to Bombay, I'm going 2 days to Bangalore, everything.
Yes, the fourth argument would have been that Swami anyway knows everything. And, you know, why do you have to write?
But that's convenient philosophy, right?
Convenient philosophy.
Exactly. But whatever said and done, the fourth argument didn't come out so strongly. I was feeling a little guilty. So I thought, anyway, you know, before going also, we usually give a letter saying that I'm going. So I thought, I'll write a letter and give it to Swami. As I'm writing the letter, Prem, you know, I didn't write that I'm going to Singapore. I just wrote, Swami, I'm going on a vacation. That's it. It'll be for 8 days. All of the details I wrote, except for the fact that I was going to Singapore, and except for the fact that it was being sponsored by someone else. So I didn't write those. I wrote the letter and I was holding, and Swami comes in the darshan lines. And as he's coming in the darshan lines, I'm holding out the letter. About 3 or 4 people before me, there was one more of my classmates holding 2 wedding cards. Must be some wedding in the family, I don't know. Swami picks up both the wedding cards from him. When he comes near me, instead of taking my letter, he throws one of the wedding cards onto my hand, into my lap. And the wheelchair is gone. So he's wheeled away and Swami is gone. So I'm just wondering, the boy comes to me and says, hey, that is the wedding card I gave, please give it back to me. So I give it back to him. And he takes it back and I don't know what to make out of it. That's it, it's over. That evening, Darshan Swami comes and bhajans everything and the session is over. Now this is the 13th of May. I think the 15th of May in the evening, I had to go and catch my flight. So I thought, oh God, this day is gone. So now come to the 14th of May.
Okay.
Those days, you know, in 2009, morning darshan was not a sure thing. Swami may come, may not come. So on 14th of May morning, there was no darshan. So 14th May evening. And I thought, this is the last possible chance. Because, you know, 15th May morning, Swami may not come for darshan. And 15th May evening, if I stay back for darshan, I'm late for my flight.
Mm-hmm.
So 14th evening, I'm sitting there, again with the same letter. I thought, you know, I should specify a little more. I wrote, Swami, you know, it's near a seashore, it's a very nice developed place.
Okay.
Still didn't mention it's foreign and it's Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And as Swami was coming close, that day, at a distance of about 3 feet, he looks at me and smiles. And that smile gave me so much of confidence and joy. And I said, Abba, now he'll take this letter from me. And as he comes close, from his lap, he picks up a vibhuti packet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that made me even more joyous because, you know, if Swami wants to bless somebody, he says, I will give prasadam, and he gives vibhuti packet. He even threw the vibhuti packet at me. And, you know, now let me go in slow motion. You know, he has thrown it like that. It has tossed from his hand. And after tossing it towards me, he turns his head away from me towards the opposite Vedam group, that is Vednaran sir and others are sitting there.
Okay.
He starts looking at them and the vibhuti packet is traveling in the air. My hands cup up to receive the vibhuti packet.
Okay.
And 3 inches away from my hand, it is snatched by another hand, you know. Somebody else comes in middle and takes the catch.
Okay.
And pockets the vibhuti packet. I look at him. He's another senior who is still with us in the ashram. Another senior who pockets it. And I'm shocked. And I'm trying to look at Swami and say, Swami, you know, this guy took it off. It was meant for me and he took it off.
Okay.
But Swami is not looking at me. He just proceeds ahead. And I'm in a shock. And I decide that let Swami leave. Once Swami is away, when the darshan is over, I'm going to tell this guy that, hey, that was meant for me, you shut up and give it to me.
Okay.
Even as the darshan is complete, I turn to him, he's almost in tears of bliss, he's closing his eyes and he's meditating. 1 minute later, his meditation gets over, and the first thing he tells me, see brother, you know, an alliance has come for me, my marriage has got fixed. And today morning, I gave a letter to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
Means he has, as you mentioned, the other boy did. This boy also had gone to Yajur Mandir and offered the letter. And Swami did not send any response. Usually Swami sends a few words or sometimes sends vibhuti packets or different things.
Acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm. Swami had sent no acknowledgement. So he was wondering what is it. Whether he should go ahead with that alliance or not go ahead. And he says, see brother, here now Swami comes and look, gives this vibhuti packet. What else? You know, for him, there was no doubt in the mind. He never felt that he snatched out of midair somebody else's vibhuti packet. And somewhere deep within me, I also knew that if this vibhuti packet was meant for me, there's no way anybody can snatch it away from me. It has to come to me. So if it has gone to him, it was meant for him. But you know, I was still in my confusion. What does that mean then? is my trip on or is it not? And the whole evening session, you know, afterwards when Swami came outside for bhajan, nothing happened. I couldn't give the letter. And Swami received aarti and left. I came back to my room. You know, I was in a really shaken state. I did not know what does this mean now. And I sat thinking, and that time when I thought, you know, this incident came back to me. I had been so, now I realize I had been even more hasty in being judgmental, right? Thinking that somebody is not surrendered fully for the Lord and yet is speaking high words. How stupid of me, how foolish of me and judgmental of me to do that. In spite of that, at that time, I realized that I was so eager to go, I was so desirous to go, that I was unable to think. I was fearful that Swami may tell me, don't go. And if Swami tells me, don't go, oh God, all my desires come crashing down. Everything, whatever I had built up about the trip will all come crashing down, and what will I do? It was such a terrible and scary scenario for me. I didn't want my first possible trip to get scuttled in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the reason I was trying all this. And then, you know, the voice of sanity, the voice of the heart, I could hear. You know, the voice of the heart you can make out, because when it speaks, you feel a kind of calming. And the voice of the heart never offers you choices. It never says, Arvind, do this or this or this. It just gently but firmly keeps saying, Arvind, do this. Arvind, do this. It's up to you to follow it. That's why I say you need the inner ear to hear it and the courage to follow it. And the heart was saying, you are so desirous of going to Singapore that you are not ready to tell it to Swami. Let go of that desire. If Swami says don't go, don't you know that it's for your best? Don't go then. If Swami says go, with a heart full of joy, you go and come. Immediately I felt so light in my heart. I tore that letter and wrote a new letter. In that letter I wrote down everything. Swami, I'm going to Singapore, it's for so many days, such and such people have called, this, everything. No holds barred. Everything I just poured out my heart. And I said, if Swami doesn't take this letter, I'm not going. I decided that also mentally. It might mean great trouble and inconvenience, but anyway, that is what I thought. To my great good fortune, on the 15th of May in the morning, Swami came for darshan.
Okay.
And so I rushed into the bhajan hall, sat near the front door,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, Swami would enter the interview room, so there's a high probability of Swami seeing physically. And when Swami saw me, and I was having this letter, see the change. Swami himself called me and asked what the letter was about.
Okay.
I just gave him the letter and sat there. He opened the letter and read through the whole thing. And when he read a few words, he mouthed out loudly. And on the first word which he said was, Singapore. Then I said, yes, Swami. 8 days, six days. I said, yes, Swami. Swami read the whole letter. I was just sitting there. And you know, I was in that real calm because I realized how foolish I had been, how stupid I had been to give my desire predominance over what Swami wants. So I just sat very calm. And then, you know, I feel that was a kind of an acid test, because Swami looks at me and he asks, do you have to go? You know, he puts the ball back in my court. Do you have to go?
Mm-hmm.
And this time, you know, I was very reinforced. I had decided that it is Swami's wish, not my desire, that should succeed. So if it is Swami's wish, you know, what is it that he is asking me? So when he asked me, do you have to go? I said, no, Swami. That is why I am asking you. If you say I should go, I will go. If you say I should not go, I will not go. That is why I am asking you, Swami, because I don't know, do I have to go or not? And then Swami looks at me and says, you go. And then, you know, I remembered the previous days, that the prasadam fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Swami, give me prasadam. And Swami gently nodded to say yes. You know, I had seen that there were these two boys who would accompany Swami, who would push the wheelchair sofa everywhere, and
right.
and they would be very alert to every single move of Swami. So usually when Swami says, I will give prasadam, they rush into the interview room and get that basket full of vibhuti packets, from which Swami picks a few packets and gives. Now Swami's indication was so subtle, he said, yes, I will give, that these two boys didn't catch it. But you know, I didn't want to lose that opportunity, because none of them went to fetch that basket. And Swami was starting to look away from me towards, okay, he had to proceed ahead. So I looked at one of those boys and said, go get vibhuti packets. And you know, he suddenly looked, he was in shock. Swami also looked. And I said, Swami, you told, no, Swami, you will give vibhuti. Then Swami looked at him and said, yes, go and get vibhuti. So he got the basket. Swami gave me 3 Vibhuti packets and yes, you know, that trip, I could make the trip. But you know, I realize from this incident that even when it comes to Swami, our desires are so strong and so blinding. They make us so really stupid, you know. It made me so stupid, so foolish, that we think that we know better than Swami. I think that I know better than Swami. I know what is good for me more than what Swami knows for me. And it is because of this desire that I get this fear. Because I fear that my desire may not get fulfilled. And therefore, you know, desirelessness is the only way to true fearlessness. The minute you have desire, you have fear. I realize this and I really pray to Swami that please Swami, whatever happens, this such beautiful experience and message that you have given, let me be able to keep in my heart forever and ever.
It's very beautiful, and as you said, you know, it's one thing to hear about such things and one thing to theorize such things, but to go through it. And I'm sure everybody would have gone through this in their own way.
Mm.
And when you let go and when you let Swami do the thinking and Swami do the choice making, you know, that kind of lightness which comes over you is something to be experienced. And we very often do this. And very interestingly, the last week we spoke about Swami talking of this very topic, and he said, have the fear of losing God's love. And we mix that up with fear of having God spoil our plans. And you know, it's a very thin line sometimes, and we get confused. We are thinking that we are avoiding this so that we don't upset Swami, but actually we are avoiding this so that Swami does not upset our plans.
Exactly. Wow, wow. That is a very, very subtle line, but a very, very profound difference. We are fearful of losing our desires rather than fearful of losing God's love.
And even as you're saying this, I think the other incident which is very apt in this is what Brother Indreshwar actually narrated. And his was, when his plans were, you know, Swami was coming, stepping on his plans, the fear which he had and the fear which he was facing when the other members of his family were trying to. But, you know, he actually let go very helplessly. I mean, we will play out that experience where he himself is narrating it. He gave up very helplessly, but, you know, he, even for that fear of displeasing Swami when you let go, the thing which happens is very beautiful, because you are in a sense giving priority to what Swami wants more than yours. Mm-hmm. It may be out of helplessness sometimes, it may be because of fear sometimes. Fear that I might take the wrong decision and Swami might know better. It might be even out of that fear, but even that time, even that fear actually may be helpful sometimes.
When it comes to following what Swami says.
Right. So I think I'll play out that clip where he himself is narrating, because he's a very good speaker and he will definitely narrate it very beautifully.
The beauty is, most boys want to join Swami's college. I was the other end of the spectrum. I did not want to join Baba's college. There was this fear lurking in my heart that if I join the ranks and files of the students in white, I'll miss the delight of that special proximity with Swami that being with grandmother gave me, you see. So I said, then I'd be down somewhere back of beyond in one of the multitudes up there. And more out of my love for Swami than out of disrespect out of the institution. It was quite a strong thought in my mind that, listen, do as what the family may try, but I must ensure that I do not get into these white platinum manacles as such and land up as an army in white over there. Baba had been sort of guiding my family as to what I should do. So he had sent me to a college which was called Rajkumar College in Rajkot. But it was one of those erstwhile institutions where the princely class were educated in India. They afterwards became public schools. They were more oriented to an army style of life. As most of the princely families deemed it quite wise, the boys came out and it was more or less considered that you join the forces for some time, as everybody being from a martial background. So Baba had sent me over there and said, send him to that institution. He'll make a man out of himself. Then I'll take over and make a gentleman out of him. So those words were always tingling in my mind. You know, make a gentleman out of him. I hope it wasn't at Bhutaparthi And I hope he could work, you know, Doordarshan elsewhere. So I had finished my studies at that school, at Rajkumar College. This was good in shooting, where I represented at the national level, and in football, where I played at the state level. I had got myself in at Xavier's in Bombay, along with a crowd of friends that we had decided we were going to be up to all the young things that young folks are up to. And so I had kind of made up my plans. Everything was masterminded. The family was not really let into it, lest they may come in and put a spoke the last minute. So this was between our friends, we had worked it all out. And one fine day in the holidays, just a few days before I was to sit for my entrance exams for Xavier's, but that was just a formality. We had worked our way around to getting in. Grandmother announced that, listen, we will go down to Puttaparthi. That sounded a little difficult for me, and I said, for how long? Said, oh, just a day or two. I said, fabulous. In a day or two, Baba's just about going to say a hi and a bye, and there's no chance of an interview. So I'm safe. We land up over here. Almost the moment we hit the portico, we found ourselves walking into the interview room. That was totally unexpected. The first moment I got inside, as I was quite free in talking with Swami, I grabbed the opportunity and told Swami that, Swami, I have finished my college. I want to join the army. I require just about the years of education before I join the army. And therefore, I'm going to discontinue the process of education. So, just 1 year of studies is a mere formality, and I've got it all worked out. Basically, I told him that I've got a plan. Please don't mess it up. Right? And that ball to be placed across was put across in no uncertain terms to Swami. Then afterwards, I sat behind at the end of the interview room, relaxed. I had done my bit. I let the interview unfold itself with grandmother talking and mother talking to Swami. There were one or two other relations. I let them say what they wanted to. I had done my bit. I was quite happy. Till at one point of time, grandmother said, of course, she had totally glossed over the fact that all this I had talked to Swami. She must be ecstatic of having entered an interview room and none of that had got inside her. She said, Swami, Gopal has finished his 10th standard. What now? I said, oh my God, why do people bring up these topics again, you see? So Swami said, nahi, 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 Rajmata. Gopal hamare college mein nahi join kar sakta hai. So I was happy. God was on my side. And then he said, you see, Rajmata, hamare college mein, and then he kept quiet for a period which seemed very long for me. It could have been just a few seconds. But for me, what happened is the entire story of my life filtered through my eyes. Hamare college mein and nahi join kar sakta, which means he can't join my college. What had I done to be disqualified? Now, almost everything that you do in a boarding school, in a public school, comes against Swami's principles. So I really didn't know what was he going to come out with. And I was stressed. I could see my mother, she was also a little worried, because I was very frank. We had a very honest relationship we shared. So, I knew that, my God, now what's going to come spilling out? And Swami enjoyed this agonizing gap. And then Swami came out. You see, Gopal eats. I used to be a non-veg. So he said, there's no meat. in my institution. I heaved a sigh of relief. Oh, that's all. Do you see? That's not too bad. Then Swami didn't let, I would say, sleeping dogs lie. Now he took up this meat topic to its logical end, and I really didn't know where he was taking it up to. From this fact, I said, Nahi Rajamata. Rajamata said, my grandmother said, Swami, if he doesn't eat for a year, after all, he's joining the army. So it's only a question of 1 year. And I was about to turn around and say, hey, listen, fancy, you know, you people, I mean, you've lived your life and had fun. I'm just about starting life. This is not the time I'm ready to relinquish all my fun and games. So, and food was very important for me. Even now, as you can see it from my appearance, if I can advocate, apart from the Jnana Marg and the Bhakti Marg and the Karma Marg and Annu Marg, as food is the way to God, I would do it. So, I turned around and looked at Swami. And Swami said, Nahi, Nahi, Gopal, don't worry. I know how badly you love meat, don't you, sir? I said, yes, Swami, I can't do without it. Yes, he can't do. You see, Rajamata, in your house, that's where I was, because we believe in Lord Shiva as our Ishtadev, we were not allowed meat on Mondays. And because of Swami, not on Thursdays. So he says, Mondays and Thursdays, Gopal religiously went jogging. Wo niche jata tha, and then he named the place Kemp's Corner mein, wo Muslim ka jaga hai, wahan kebab kha ke aata tha. Hai na Gopal? So Gopal had to nod his head for want of words. Ye to kuch nahi Rajamata. This is on the days that he didn't get meat. Now in his college, in Rajkumar College, he got meat every day. To bhi kabhi kabhi bahar jata tha khane ke liye. Now just between us, what happened is we were not allowed money in the place where I studied. So we were allowed a very pitiful amount of 10 rupees a month. Because we under that kind of army regimentation. That too as coupons which had held no currency outside. But we all kept some amount of cash, and depending how your pockets were dangling, you'd sometimes go over. I would go to a restaurant which is called Reshma. It's a small Muslim place where I'd have my kebabs and things. And if, you know, I was left not with the pounds but with the pennies, then it was one of those hand carts which served omelette. So that area, that thing was called Bharti store. So what Swami said is, see Rajamata, even on days that he did get meat, he used to still go out because he wanted more. Kabhi Reshma ke paas chata tha, kabhi Bharti ke paas chata tha. That's it. Grandmother took it in the absolute obvious sense. Okay. And she said, oh Swami, these Rajputs, these guys are notorious, you know. They can never change their ways, they can never mend their style, Gopal will be destroyed. She fell at Swami's feet, Swami, please, there is one grandchild that I have some hopes from, he will be destroyed. Please take him at your lotus feet, please put him on the institution over here. Rajamata, aise usko nahi aana hai, but tum bolo to. Then he looks at me and he says, nee, aisa nahi hai. Rajamata, there is more. Gopal, main aur bolu. I thought he had done enough damage for the day. And he said, nahi Swami. And he said, so fir Gopal, tum college join karta hai? Yes, Swami. Alright. So, you have cases where people have yielded to doing things at gunpoint. I came into the institution at gunpoint, held hostage by Swami. Alright, so that's how I came in.
That's the incident which I was referring to.
You know, I think, Prem, some of the statements we must translate it for our audience who do not understand Hindi. You know, the killer statement, right, if I can call it so.
The main crux will be lost otherwise.
Yeah. He said that he used to go to eat omelette at Reshma's shop.
Omelette at Bharati's stall called Bharati's stall.
Bharati's stall and Reshma's restaurant for the meat.
Right.
And Swami tells the Rajmata that when he doesn't get meat at home, at times he goes to Reshma or he goes to Bharati. And both Reshma and Bharati are names of women, feminine names. So he says that she took it in the worst possible meaning. And that's what tends her to put him into the college.
Right. And you know, this is another example of how fear actually works in your favor sometimes. Because he says, and it's a wonderful story, and I'm surprised how we missed this when we spoke about non-vegetarianism. Because, you know, in the later part of the same interview, he narrates how that eventually, understandably, when he joined Swami's college, he became a vegetarian eventually. Not only did he become a vegetarian, later Swami encouraged him to start a business which is in what you call now vegetarian, non-vegetarian foods.
Uh-huh.
Which is like...
You make food from soya,
right,
that looks and tastes like meat but is not meat.
Exactly. You call it vegetarian chicken and vegetarian mutton and all those things.
Helps people to de-addict themselves.
Exactly. Like when you have those nicotine strips or something which helps you de-addict from cigarette. You know, it's something like that. It just gives you that flavor and taste of non-vegetarian food, but it's vegetarian.
I don't think nicotine strips work that way, but anyway,
okay.
But we got the idea of the idea of this meat, so that you feel that you're eating meat, so
right,
you're mentally and sensually satisfied, but actually you're not eating meat.
Right.
Finally, you come to a point where you can give up meat altogether. Yeah, great.
So Swami was telling him that, you know, this will help people who want to give up but are not able to give up.
Aha, okay. So, yes, you know, coming back, dear listeners, to that important point regarding fear which we want to discuss, that is how desire leads to fear. And yes, this was another beautiful incident. But then, you know, Prem, this brings up the question that if fearlessness can be got only by desirelessness, you know, how does it translate practically? In the practical world, does it mean that I must not desire? Is it wrong for me to feel that I must, you know, do very well in my career? I must be a very good speaker, or I must be a very good person, I must be a very good player. I mean, even ambition is a desire, right? So when we say cut out desire, does it mean we cut out ambition? How, in order to be fearless, does it mean that we have to be lifeless, insipid and dull?
And it's very interesting, when we started speaking about fear, we had to quote from the Gita. And
okay,
I think the same treatise has an explanation for this. But before we come to that, you know, one analogy which often comes to my mind and which for me is a very clear explanation of this very confusion. As you said, you know, life would be very sedate if we don't have ambition and if we don't have that drive to do things.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
That is what actually gives us the kick in life. That's what actually encourages us to do the things we do. I mean, if we don't see a result, or if we don't have a desire, we don't get the inspiration and life is boring.
Most of us, if you don't have anything to work towards, it doesn't sound like a very rosy picture. But you know, take the example of, I often think of it this way, that there is a man who's taking a penalty shootout.
In soccer, right.
And there is a goalkeeper, there's a goal in front of you, there's a ball at your feet, and you're supposed to score a goal past this goalkeeper.
Okay, so the goalkeeper is like an obstacle, and the goal is there, and the ball is the effort that you're going to put into.
Right.
Well, the metaphor is clear.
Right. So, if you just take into the factors that which influence this person being able to score that goal.
Okay, let me try to list them out. The factors are how strong his kick will be,
right,
what direction the kick will be,
right,
how he'll be able to use the wind direction in his favor.
The swing and the swerve and all that.
Yeah, I think most this.
And maybe to an extent he'll have to ensure that he reads that goalkeeper well. You know,
the goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper
correct.
Is moving towards the right, obviously he should not be kicking towards the right.
Correct.
So you would think that these are so many factors which influence him able to get a goal. But if he gets all this right, and in that last moment the goalkeeper actually reads him, and the goalkeeper reads the direction in which the kick is coming, you know, he might get all this right, but he still will not score.
Yeah, valid point. You mean to say that if he gets the wind speed, the ball kick speed, the direction, everything right, even if he gets all of that right, it is not a 100% guarantee that he will get a goal.
So which means, when you say, what is the probability of him scoring?
50-50.
It's just 1/2. And it as much depends on him as much as it does not. Because...
Correct. It also depends on the goalkeeper.
It also depends on the goalkeeper. So correct. Everything which we do in life is like that. You know, we think that it all depends on what we do. But actually, as much as it depends on us, it does not depend on us.
Mm-hmm. You know, very interesting, because if we take it from the goalkeeper's perspective also,
right.
The same thing holds
exactly.
Good. The goalkeeper may do everything right, and yet if the person there kicks the ball in a manner which he is not able to read it, that's it. So, in spite of doing all his training, everything perfectly, there is still only a 50-50 chance that the goalkeeper may block the goal. You know, I think I'm able to guess where you're headed to. It just means that if the goalkeeper does his homework perfectly right, there's a 50-50 chance that he may prevent the goal or not prevent the goal. And if the guy kicking the ball does his homework and everything perfectly right, there's a 50-50 chance that he may either kick or not kick. Which means that if they don't do their homework right, there is a greater chance that he may not score at all. It might be 100-0.
So all the thing you're doing is just to make sure that 50% is right. But if you look at Bhagavad Gita, what Bhagavad Gita says is, now there are two variables in front of you. Okay, either you place all your satisfaction on scoring
the goal,
the goal, or you place all your satisfaction in preparing to score that goal. So if you place all your satisfaction in preparing, which is in your control, which is absolutely in your control, then you will derive all your happiness and satisfaction from that preparation, from that kick, from that direction, from that power.
So you get your kick actually from the kick and not from the goal.
Yeah, well said. I think that's pretty much it.
Beautiful. Makes perfect sense, because it also clears this wrong idea that when we say we should not have desire, it means that we should not have ambition. You know, when we say we should not have desire which can cause fear, it is a desire for that result. If I feel that as a soccer player, if I feel that unless I kick a goal, I'm not going to be happy, then it's only 50% chance that I'll have happiness, which means 50% chance that I'll have fear. The other result is fearful for me. But as you said, if I find my joy in my ability to prepare myself, keep myself fit, prepare for the kick, think out well and do everything fine. If I am happy, if I do all that right, then my joy doesn't depend on what the goalkeeper does. Irrespective of whether it goes for the goal or not, if I have done everything of mine perfectly, it gives me joy. And it gives me also further motivation to keep doing the same thing over and over again, because it's giving me joy. You know, I'm reminded of a beautiful statement made by the Indian cricketing legend, Sachin Tendulkar, you know, okay. In an interview, when they asked him whether, what is the kind of innings that gives him great joy, you know. If you hit a century, is it a test inning or a one day inning? One of the answers that he had given at one point, it has stuck in my head, because he said, it doesn't depend on the number of runs I score. Okay. I mean, for a great cricketer, how can just scoring 8 runs be fantastic? You know, he says that if when the ball is bowled to me, when I'm facing it with my bat, and I play my shot, before playing that shot in that microsecond, based on my training and based on everything, whatever I have practiced, I have an idea where the ball must head to, at what speed it must go, how it must go. Because, you know, there have been times when Sachin has said that when I play the ball, I already know, depending on the distance to the fielder, whether it is a single or a double that I can take. He says, this and all is already decided.
Right.
So all this plan is made based on experience and based on that intuition, instinct, your batting instinct. I play the shot. He says, if I have played the shot and that fielder makes an excellent move and takes it as a catch, he says, I am not disappointed at all. At the same time, you know, I play the shot, and had it gone where I intended it to go, the fielder might actually catch it. But instead of that, it hits me at the wrong part of the bat, flies behind, and goes for a boundary. Actually, I have been saved from getting out. I am not happy. Because it went in a direction which I didn't intend it to. So he says, in an innings when I am able to play every ball where I am intending it to, irrespective of the result, I want to play a square cut. It might happen that somebody will jump up and bring out a catch of a lifetime and I am out. It doesn't matter. I intended to hit it to square leg, I intend to square cut it, it went for a square cut. I am happy. Whether it fetches me 4 runs or whether I get out. You know, it is phenomenal that, I'm sure he knows it at the level of the heart, but it is so phenomenal that intuitively and instinctively he's following the Bhagavad Gita, because his joy, the way he judges an innings he plays, is based on what he intended to do, whether he could do it. Not dependent on the ultimate result, whether it fetched him a boundary, whether it got him only 1 run, or whether it got him out. So phenomenal it is. And that shows that, you know, if we see Sachin Tendulkar's life and career, we will know that this kind of ambition and aspiration is in no way demotivating, because he is the guy with the maximum number of world records in cricket.
And there's another beautiful thing which you mentioned, even as you, you know, referred to that statement of Sachin Tendulkar. It also shows that in life that you have short-term goals and you have long-term goals.
Mm.
You know, there Sachin's goal was not to get that boundary. It was to get his stroke play right.
Mm.
But the eventual goal is to win the match.
Correct.
But if he played a very good game and if he lost the match, he would still feel bad.
Exactly.
You know, and even in life, we have to put all our focus on what we do. And we know that doing that is actually going to give us that eventual victory.
Mm.
So, you know, sometimes you have to let go of your day-to-day victories and small wins. So that with the knowledge that eventually this is going to lead me to the ultimate victory.
Losing the battles to win the war.
Right, exactly. And that is also a very important point, because, you know, when we spoke about your small desires not being fulfilled and, you know, when your small plans being scuttled, you know, that's when you realize that sometimes you have to let go of all these small plans so that the master plan will unfold.
Exactly. And that is where, you know, this aspect of fear, we can conclude that if we have to combat desire, let us not mistake this as the desire to achieve something. You must, you know, like somebody said, act as if everything depends on you. But after acting, when it comes to waiting for the results, behave as if nothing depends on you. I mean, act as if everything depends on you, but feel as if nothing depends on you. It's like the another way of wording the same thing, which Lord Krishna says, that karmanye vadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. I mean, always strive for your efforts, but leave out the results. Leave out the fruits of the action. Because when you are able to derive your joy from efforts alone, then as long as you put in efforts, you're getting your joy. But the minute your joy depends on the results of the effort, then that's it, fear comes in. And that is what we mean by saying desire causes fear. When you desire, saying that only if this happens I'll be happy, otherwise I will not be, then it's as like the guy kicking the football or like the goalkeeper stopping the football, it's only 50% in our hands. The rest of it is not in our hands. And therefore, we have fear. We have fear. So, this aspect of fear where we have to overcome fear by giving up desire is by giving up desire for the result. So that should in no way affect our enthusiasm and passion. And that is one beautiful way in which, you know, somebody, I don't remember who, summarized Swami's way of action, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said that Swami is involved in everything he does, but attached to nothing he does. I feel that is what we should learn. If we are involved in whatever we do, but we are not attached. Attachment comes when there is desire for the result. And if we are able to remove that, if we are able to be involved and not be attached, we will have no fear and we will be able to proceed with the faith that God is always doing what is best for me, and therefore there is no need to fear. Why fear when He's here?
And that also explains why, you know, many times Swami lets things go wrong in your life.
Mm.
Because that is when you realize that, okay, I could go through it, you know. I was scared of the situation, but I could actually go through it. And that's why one of the people who explaining fears, he says, you know, your fear comes out of your imagination.
Hmm.
You know, you imagine the possible outcome of a certain situation.
Hmm.
And that imagination depends on your knowledge, right? You're going into a business. You know how many ways that business can go wrong. So the more knowledgeable you are, the more imagination you will have and the more fear you will have.
Correct.
When we come to Swami, if Swami can become a part of every imagination, if Swami's ability to solve the problems becomes the part of every imagination, then the end result will be only that, you know, Swami can take care of the situation. You know,
perfect.
More and more fear goes out of the picture.
Perfect. Whenever, you know, we come across fear, we see it is because of our ability to imagine, as you said. We start imagining, what if this happens, what if this happens. It is fine if we imagine like that. But as you said, in every of those imaginations, let us bring in Swami. What if this, but there Swami is there. But Swami is there. Whenever a what if comes, let's put a but Swami also over there. Because Swami is there and Swami can change everything. And Swami is doing everything for the best possible, for the best possible result for us.
Right.
Which we may not be able to judge. And that is why, you know, one of our listeners has so beautifully given an acronym for fear. He said that, I used to think that fear means, F-E-A-R, forget everything and run.
Right, that sounds very apt.
He says, but today with Swami, I realized that fear, F-E-A-R, stands for face everything and rise.
Beautiful.
You know, we spoke about facing the devil. Because fearful situations, fearful experiences, fearful instances, there may be many times where we may not be able to see a direct connection between desire and fear. But let us realize that every fear is actually arising because we feel about the non-fulfillment of some desire, some like. There, as they said, there are only two forces in the world, love and fear. Fear comes as the opposite of love. So, fearful experiences are in fact, in reality, they are opportunities that God gives us to overcome fear. I think that is best summarized by the experience of Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. And she explained so beautifully of a very, very fearful situation in her life. And how she overcame that fear because of her faith in Swami. And once we listen to this narrative, we realize that every such fearful situation that arises in our life also is actually a strong message from God to us, a strong message to us to help us use that as an opportunity to overcome that very same fear. So dear listeners, we will play this experience, this narration as narrated to us at Radio Sai by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram. I'm sure you'll enjoy this. At the end of that, you will be joined on the other side of that narration by Brother Chandu Vijay with his segment Love to Love. Hope you enjoyed this discussion on fear. We know that it is not comprehensive. There are so many more aspects and facets to it. And just like a few points and a few mails from our listeners inspired us to carry it on for another week, if we get more and more inputs and insight, we can definitely carry on this discussion after the next fortnight, because the next fortnight is the fortnight for Ramkatha Rasavahini. As always, before playing this clip, we offer this segment at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, grateful to Him for having used us as instruments, and praying to Him to use us as His instruments always, for we are nothing without Him. With that, we now play the clip and then conclude. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
So I will share first an incident. I would not even be here today speaking to all of you if it not for His grace a month ago. On November 22nd last month, our Sai Center in South Bethesda had planned a big program for 4 days for Swami's birthday. It was the Thanksgiving weekend, and we all wanted to at least enjoy part of the joy that people were enjoying in Puttaparthi. So we had a 4-day celebration. And on 23rd afternoon, our program would begin. So on 22nd, I had been very busy. I'm the SSC coordinator there. So we had planned a very big program for the children. So I had been very busy throughout the 3 months getting the children ready for the program. So on 22nd evening around 5:30 or so, I decided to just go and buy some flowers and fruit for my morning worship the following day for Swami's birthday. So I went to the store. It is a very big shopping area. There were lots of people there shopping for Thanksgiving. Very crowded. It was about 5:30 in the evening. And on the way, I went to the ATM drive-thru to draw some money. And as I parked my car to draw some money, I had parked the car a little away from the machine and couldn't reach the buttons, short as I am. So I had to open my car door, and I had one leg outside, and I had just drawn some money. There was another car waiting behind me to use the ATM after me. And of course, I didn't see this, but a man from behind, the bank was on a little hillock. He ran over the grassy area, ran from behind that car, and ran to my car, and opened the back door of my car, and got into my car. He put his arm around me. I was half out of the car, because I had one leg out. He put his left arm around me, and in his right hand, he had a knife, which he put to my throat, and said, "Drive, drive, drive." So of course I couldn't drive because I hadn't closed the door or anything. And I said, "Look, if it is the money you want, I will give it to you." So he said, "No, drive, drive. Don't you see they are chasing me? Drive," he said. So I said, "I have to close the door first." So he sort of loosened his grip a little bit so I could sit properly. I closed the door, and this is where of course Swami's grace comes in. That 1 minute of delay that happened, you know, me closing the door, having this conversation with him, by that time, 2 police cars, which apparently had already been chasing him, came in from the other side and blocked off the 2 ATM entrances. So I couldn't drive out of the ATM. There was another car in the second lane. That car also couldn't drive out. So the cars blocked off the entrance. And about 6 police officers got out of the car and started to walk towards my car. But as they got a little closer, they realized he held a knife at my throat, and they didn't want to agitate, I think, him. So they just stopped about 15 feet away from my car. I could see them, he could see them. I could see him in the rear view mirror. I could not see his face. He had his hat down on his face. I have a little sticker of Swami in my car, a picture of Swami. I had my hand on the picture. And as the police officer stopped, I just started to talk to this man. And I said, "Look, if you do anything to me, you will be really in for trouble. You will be in there all your life. If you just gave yourself up now, you would only probably be in there for 2 or 3 years. You can see you cannot really run out of here. You can see I cannot drive you out of here. Don't you think you should give yourself up?" And then I said, "Look, if you do something to me, a dead person really doesn't worry about what happens with the rest of the world, but you are here to face the consequence." There was a little silence, and then he said, "How come you are not afraid?" So I said, "Well, what is the point in being afraid? You have control of me completely. I cannot do much. If it's my time to go, it's my time to go. My children are grown and my life is pretty much settled. But like I said, you won't be able to go anywhere. There are cars surrounding us, or we could hear the sirens from the police cars. You won't be able to go anywhere. You would be much better off if you gave yourself up." There was again a silence for about a minute or so. And this is of course Swami talking through me, and he said, "Okay." And he opened the door, put his hands up in the air, and started to walk towards the police officers. He passed my headlight of my car. And the police, of course, just pounced on this man. More than the actual being held by this man in captivity, really, them just pouncing on this human being was a terrible thing to see. I mean, we hear about it, see it on the TV, but he had his hands up in the air. He was surrendering himself. They pounced on him, handcuffed him, and they would not even allow him to get up. They just dragged him and threw him into the car. And of course, that car moved away, another police car came, and then they came and surrounded me to check out if I was all right. But my only thought, I kept asking them, you know, "Why did you do that to him? He was surrendering. Why did you?" So they said, "Can you drive out of the ATM area into a parking lot?" And I asked them, you know, "How does the law work here in this? Do you get him a lawyer? What happens to him?" So they all thought I was slightly crazy, I think. They told me my sympathies were misplaced, and that I should be worrying about a lawyer for myself. Then, of course, they asked me many questions as to what I had said to him, that he could get out of the car, and I explained what I had said. And they couldn't believe it when I told them what I had said. The fact that I had said, "Well, you know, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. I mean, I don't think it's in our control anyway." So so that was what happened that day. I have been a troublesome child to Swami. In fact, Swami has joked with me once before. Everybody celebrates my birthday, But you always give me work during my birthday. Because this is one birthday where he, of course, helped me like this. After he came back to Bangalore, on 24th actually, my parents were in Puttaparthi when this happened. I didn't tell them. I couldn't contact them in Puttaparthi after this had happened. And on 24th, when my mother was sitting in Darshan, Swami apparently came to her in the Darshan line and said, "How is Geeta?" So my mother, who had left for Parthi on 10th, said, "She's all right, Swami, she's fine." So Swami said, "Oh, is she fine?" So immediately she was a little taken aback, because she knew that, of course, he knew something she didn't. So she said, "I talked to her on the 10th. I don't know how she is, Swami. I only spoke to her on the 10th of this month." Then Swami told her, "Now she is all right. She's okay now." That's all he told her, and she thought maybe I was sick or something. Then when she came back from Puttaparthi, I told her of this incident, and she realized what Swami had told her. And when Swami came back to Vrindavan on the 2nd of December, then my father went to Swami's presence. As he was saying, my father is the person who walks behind Swami with the bag of letters. You might have seen him in Vrindavan. So when my Swami went that morning, as soon as Swami came, Swami described the whole, I had not even called them as yet, and Swami described the whole scene to them and said what had happened and how the man had run in and what words I had spoken. And he said, "She was always crazy, she's crazier now." She was asking for a lawyer for the, that fellow joked about me a little bit. The point that I really wanted to make here is, it's of course wonderful to know that Swami always assures us that I'm always with you, I'm always with you. But many times we keep saying it, I have said it many times when I stand here, but sometimes we don't believe that within our hearts, and therefore sometimes the quality of the life that we lead may not be exactly what Swami expects. And something like this reassures us so much that Swami is constantly with us. Not only is He constantly with us, He knows every single thought, word and action that we are doing.